calling the House Committee on Consumer Protection for the Oregon State Legislature to order. It's Friday, April 6, 2007. We have a little business to take care of today. I'm going to go ahead and work a couple of bills first. And with that, I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 91. Craig Smith, would you like to come up and refresh our memories about this non-controversial bill?
Chair Holby, members of the committee, it's Craig Smith with the Construction Contractors Board. I thank you for the opportunity to address you regarding Senate Bill 91. This is really just a housekeeping measure. It's designed to clarify the mandate in statute that owners of construction businesses and their responsible managing individuals need to have their names and address on record with the Construction Contractors Board. And if those people change during the course of the license, it requires the business to tell us about that change. Pretty simple bill.
Thank you. Do any committee members have any questions on this bill? We've heard it. It was pretty okay. Everybody's comfortable. Thank you, Craig. With that, I take a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that we pass Senate Bill 91 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonamici moves Senate Bill 91 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? None either, but we'll still call the roll. Will you call the roll and remember we are coming from the right?
Aye.
Aye.
Excused.
Aye.
Excused.
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 91, having received the required votes, is declared passed. Do I have a volunteer for a carrier on that bill?
I'll do it.
Representative Gerard will carry Senate Bill 91. Thank you, Representative. With that, I close the work session on Senate Bill 91.
Mr. Chair, do you need to open a...
No.
Okay.
Make a motion to suspend the rules, please.
Mr. Chair, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsideration of the vote on House Bill 2871.
Representative Bonamici moves the rules be suspended for the purposes of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2871. Those of the opinion that the rules should be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on the bill will vote aye, and those opposed will vote no. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Riley?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative
Galicia?
Aye.
Representative
Drog?
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move that we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2871 was sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonamici moves that we reconsider the vote by which passed House Bill 2871. Is there any discussion?
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. Is it, do we have to call an absent member's name on all votes, including these, for the record? We just bypassed Representative Nelson's filing.
She
was excused.
She was excused. Did we not call her on the last roll call?
No. We're just voting to reconsider.
She
might be excused.
For the whole day, so I'm...
No, you are correct. Her name needs to be called on each vote. So, thanks for that.
You're welcome.
I got to figure out how to get back there. Representative Bonamici, would you make a motion to suspend the rules? Make a motion so that we suspend.
I move that we suspend the rules for the purpose of calling Representative Nelson's name on the previous. motion to suspend the rules.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Here comes Ramona in a second.
Would you? Yeah. She's not in the office. Would you please call Representative Nelson's name for the reconsideration, for suspending the rules to reconsider the vote on House Bill 2871? Excused.
Sorry.
Thank you, Representative Gillian.
My pleasure.
It's reassuring to know that we look out for our fellow members.
Stickler for procedures.
That's me.
I think we were on. Is there any discussion?
No. The motion carries.
The first motion.
Yes.
So this is where we are.
We need a new motion to reconsider.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move that we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2871 was sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonamici moves that we reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 2871. Is there any discussion? I will note that we are not going to work this bill today. We will be working it on April 11th, which will be Wednesday, House Bill 2871. Those of the opinion that we should reconsider the vote by which we passed, by way which we've motion to be reconsidered. Those of the opinion we should reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 2871 will vote aye, and those opposed will vote no. So we will call a roll.
Representative Riley?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Excused.
Aye.
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 Aye. The motion carries and the vote has been reconsidered. Thank you. With that, I would like to open a hearing on House Bill 3242.
Can we get amendments on this?
Steve, why don't you give us a brief summary of House Bill 3242, which we have carried over from April 4th.
Thank you, Chair Holvey. House Bill 3242 creates categories and levels of construction contractor license.
Mr. Chair, are we supposed to have amendments for this yet or not?
3242? I don't think I haven't seen any yet, so.
Well, I thought they were going to have some growing up.
First up, I'd like to have Stephen Kafori, Paul Olson, Mary Mann, and Phil Peach.
Mr. Chair.
Is that correct?
It is, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Stephen Kafori, representing the Oregon Remodelers Association. Since there are only three chairs here, I'd just like to introduce myself and then have my clients introduce themselves, and they will present the testimony. I do have a statement from Jeremy Anderson from Weatherization Industries Saves Energy Organization, and I'll pass that to your staff. I'd like to start with Phil Peach, who's the Executive Director of the Oregon Remodelers Association.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I don't have any prepared testimony. My name is Phil Peach. I'm President and CEO of the Oregon Remodelers Association. I just want to make a few brief introductory remarks. My main purpose is introducing a couple of our members that have come today. I will say that we did invite the requester of the bill, AGC, to our Government Affairs Committee in December to become familiar with a proposal for dual licensing. We did make it clear at the time that we would be opposed to anything that would prohibit a remodeler from working on a commercial site without having to fulfill higher definitions, with including bonding insurance and so on. We also were concerned if there would be any effects on the current exemption for sole proprietors for workers' comp insurance. And so that was the other main issue that we expressed concern about, that we intended to be opposed to. So we were a little surprised that all of that still came forward in the bill. We, in short, represent the little guys, about 375 members. Two-thirds of our members are five or less employees, usually including the owner and the owner's spouse, typically. We have general contractors. We have specialty contractors, really the whole gamut, painters, plumbers, people that specialize in just installing countertops, carpet laying, and so on. These people depend on the ability to do occasionally jobs in what might be considered commercial, condos, apartments, even larger duplexes, and so on. Quite a few of our members are what you would call a handyman. This bill would require them, if they want to even set foot on commercial property, to occasionally do a repair in an apartment or a condo, to fulfill the higher definition that's proposed here. And when they're already having trouble paying for insurance now, which the cost is out of control, having to now increase their bonding to four or five times what it is now under the proposed definition. We support many aspects of this bill. We've been very involved in the Construction Claims Task Force and the CCB in supporting things like continuing education. We support building envelope certification. We support raising the minimum surety bond amount. These are coming out in other bills from the task force and in our discussions with the CCB. I'm a little surprised that all of these are in this bill. You've got everything from licensing to language on warranties. The workers' comp issue will be affected. Prioritization and claims, which could have some impact on lien law. Frankly, if this was an initiative petition, I think it would be ruled out of order and probably wouldn't make the ballot. There's a little of everything in it. If the goal of this bill is to establish a definition of commercial contractors as sort of an elite separate class, that's fine, but not at the expense of the little guy and the small remodelers who occasionally depend on the ability to do work on commercial property. Frankly, to us, it's an anti-small business bill, and we are opposed. With that, I'd like to turn to two of our members to introduce themselves and present their testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Paul Olson. I'm with Gale Contractor Services. We're primarily an insulation company serving many facets of the building construction industry. We have small branches in Seaside and Cottage Grove, Bend and Salem. In my 26 years in the weatherization industry, I've been vice president of a large remodeling firm, owned my own business as a sole proprietor, and as a partner. Gale is a member of the Oregon Remodelers Association, and I currently serve as chair of the Government Affairs Committee. I'd like to state unequivocally that, but somewhat reluctantly, that Oregon Remodelers Association would object to this legislation as currently written, and based on conversations that I had in the hallway and actually subsequently while driving down here with representatives from AGC, it doesn't appear that the issues we're concerned about could be corrected without extensive redefinition of the terms involved in this legislation, namely what constitutes a small contractor, what constitutes commercial contractor, what constitutes residential contractors. It affects the scope and the size of the work on the margins where contractors perform work both for the residential industry and, as Phil stated, for medium to large apartment complexes. As I was leaving town, I spotted a van. The van said Schmuck Brothers Painting, small van, nicely painted. I got to thinking about potentially what this guy might have as his client base, which is four or five apartment complexes, anywhere from 5 to 15 units, who call him every once in a while and say, so-and-so in apartment number 4 moved out. Would you come in and paint? That's a bread-and-butter job. He gets those calls. He doesn't have to go out and bid it. It's pretty regular business for him. Instead, what he'd have to say is, I'm sorry, I'm not a commercial contractor. That would be quite a shock to find out that this piece of legislation had passed, and now he has to become certified as a contractor. He may have been in business 3 years. He's a really fine painter, but he wouldn't qualify to work in that apartment complex because he didn't have 4 years of experience. So what I'm summarizing here is kind of a picture of the kinds of small contractors that would be affected by this. If we'd sat in on last, if people in, you or somebody had sat, or the audience had sat in on last Wednesday's testimony from the AGC, one might have concluded that this bill was intended to correct problems in large, sophisticated construction companies such as Walsh and Emmerich with 400-page contracts and a team of lawyers to make sure everything, all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. And that's really patently not the case. This bill will affect thousands of small business people, businessmen and women, many of them sole proprietors, most of them with plenty of talent to paint the walls of a burned-out apartment building, or a burned-out apartment. And speaking of small contractors who choose to be sole proprietors, it's a privilege that's traditional in Oregon, and rightly so. The issue of whether to require an owner to carry workman's comp insurance has been his or her choice. The issue has been debated in the Oregon legislature for many years. It's a thorny issue. It's hard to come to an agreement on it. The Oregon Remodelers Association supports workman comp requirements for employees, but we strenuously object to the bill that sole proprietors carry workman's comp on themselves if they want to be at any level of commercial contractor. Quite frankly, it's a sneaky way to end run this complicated and thorny issue. If the legislature wants to take on the issue, let them face it head on, with all the affected parties having their say. The AGC said in their testimony they incorporated a lot of good ideas from other areas. I'm not sure which ones in that bill they are. They said they added some of their own. I'm not sure which ones they are. One they didn't have to struggle with, and which they keep coming back to, is the definition of the term commercial contractor. That term shows up conveniently in the law, but primarily for purposes of building codes. And it conveniently, for the purpose of this bill, limits the size and scope of what remodelers could work on without a dual licensing or some sort of other endorsement. It now would limit that small contractor from working on complexes fewer than 5 units, less than 4,000 square feet, or less than 2 stories high. And this will negatively impact thousands of legitimate remodelers and handymen who currently work on or for apartment complexes. The Oregon Remodelers Association supports raising the surety bond requirements. That issue is addressed in proposed legislation. The ORA supports continuing education. That also is addressed in separate legislation. We support envelope certification. That also is addressed in other proposed legislation. And we are just as dismayed as a lot of people are, as witnessed by the AGC testimony, that there are so-called independent contractor firms that are skirting the employee requirements in order to avoid paying workman's comp. But quite frankly, to hear the AGC talk about it, it sounds like there are thousands of employees that are injured that are showing up in emergency rooms, or millions and millions of dollars worth of lawsuits by injured workers. ORA asked the CCB if, in fact, that was happening, and they stated that it was not. So this is more of a problem looking for a solution. We believe the CCB, if funded adequately, could have a large impact on that very problem. Finally, this bill, if passed, really represents a policy shift in the state of Oregon, which effectively states there'll be two types of contractors, commercial guys and the residential guys. I hope this is not where the committee intends to take the contracting profession. Thank you.
Thank you.
After your testimony, should I hand it out?
Yeah, you can give it to the committee assistant there. That'd be fine.
Yeah.
Representative Chair Holby and the rest of the committee, my name is Mary Mann. I am president of Goose Hollow Window Company. This is my 27th year in business. I am a member of the Oregon Remodelers Association, the National Association of Remodeling Industries, for 20 years. I'm a member of the Multifamily Housing Association, member of the Rental Association of Greater Portland. I'm an energy trust contractor, ally, and I have a family business. My son's my general manager. I use subcontractors. I fit a model that's very, very typical and common in my industry. I replace windows and doors and insulation. And I am here opposing this proposed bill. I think the big question that has to be asked here is this about consumer protection or is this about protectionism for a select group of business owners? And that's what I am. I'm a business owner. I do a lot of work with large multifamilies and have for a long time, yet to have a claim on those apartments, insurance payouts, or anything like that. There have been no facts presented by the AGC and the supporters of this bill that support the entire upheaval of our industry. There's no proof whatsoever that this will reduce claims or that claims that are being made are statistically so great that normal types of claims will not continue. I was also the president for 6 years of the Independent Contractors of Oregon and spent three legislative sessions down here trying to demythify this idea that there's a lot of independent contractors working illegally or collectively together or that they will, as soon as they hit the ground, claim that they're employee. We asked six workers' comp carriers in an ORE office one day if that was the case, and they said no. That was mythology, but it was being used to promote this idea. And so I'd like to go on the record saying there's no proof that that's happening, and that's one of the reasons they're promoting that workers' comp be included in this. Right now there's about 43,000 contractors. According to the AGC, they have about 2,000 members. I would put that in a minority, and I do not believe we should legislate for the minority to impact the many. In this case, the many represent a huge economy in the state of Oregon, and this definition of commercial contracting isn't appropriate, as this bill wants to indicate. For these 43,000 contractors, there's probably well over 2 to 4 million contracts written every year. Many of them, obviously, are in the commercial contract as we all. I can tell you what I view as a commercial contractor, and I am not one. And I don't build high-rises, and I don't work on things over 4 stories. Most of my industry, we don't do that. It requires a different kind of sophistication in the technology, and most of us never go there. We're not stepping on the toes of the people, so we don't understand where all this is coming from. But unfortunately, if they want to make me a commercial contractor, I might be able to squeeze in and be one, but I'll tell you, most of the people I work with and the subcontractors will not be able to get a $50,000 or $75,000 bond. So then they say, well, let's just put you into a category where you say you have less experience. We'll give you a $25,000 bond. A lot of these people won't be able to do that. The insurance companies start to view how they view their criteria for bonding is totally different. Splitting contractors into two groups will raise the cost of work. It will give a competitive shift and advantage to commercial contractors. This is restrictive legislation. I've had discussions with some of the major property owners in the last couple of days and the property management companies. They rely on inexpensive, the least they can get, labor to do the work, and they try to get the best people. They make sure everyone's licensed and bonded and insured. I also have to make sure I keep my contract. Everybody I use has to be licensed, bonded, insured, and my insurances require that. They're terrified that this would happen to them because they could no longer use their regular people. A lot of contractors make well under $100,000 a year doing this kind of work. Some are in that gray area, but the majority of the contractors could not afford to become commercial contractors because if they could, the commercial contractors wouldn't be promoting this bill because they want to make it onerous. And if anyone tells you that they're not going to create a hardship, that's because they can't pin down the insurance industries to tell you what the liability insurance claims will, insurance rates will go up. I had a conversation with my insurance agent, two of them in fact. One of them said to me that there's no way that they could actually guarantee that liability insurance rates wouldn't rise just by the classification. One of them said, well, we just consider Oregon a little quirky that they want to define commercial contractors this way. I do multifamily. Even though the CCB says that that would be considered commercial, my insurance company does not consider that commercial. But as soon as the line's drawn in the sand, And the legislature says, well, now that's commercial. That would give impetus maybe to these insurance companies to say, oh, well, you're a different classification. We assume maybe you'll build high-rises. We're going to start raising your insurance rates. We can't control that. You can't control that until it happens. And I'm saying the gamble is too great to risk that this could devastate our industry and the economies and the small families that depend on this money. I'm also, as an Energy Trust ally, part of the public interest trust, if you want to think of it that way. The Energy Trust of Oregon, if any of you are familiar, responsible for dispensing about $60 million a year from our utility rates and getting them to the hands of homeowners and to multifamily users for energy conservation. Right now, with the way the governor's energy policy is stating, this could greatly diminish the ability for the governor to meet their goals for energy conservation in the state of Oregon. Because a lot of this work now would have to be done by commercial contractors. That would raise the price significantly, and all of a sudden all these kilowatt hours savings projections are going down the toilet because nobody's going to be able to afford to do it. I deal with large apartment complexes where if they don't get that 35% tax credit and they can't keep these prices down for labor and installation, all the money in the world isn't going to save it. They have got to keep these margins the way they are, and it's a tough sell right now. It won't get better. And they are not ignorant. One of the things that I heard on the last testimony by the representative from the Walsh Construction was that we had to protect these ignorant, naive owners of properties from being getting poor quality work. Well, I want to tell you, all the people I work with check out everybody they work with. They look at our work, and they're informed business people. If something happens and there's a mistake, which doesn't happen that often, that's the luck of the draw. We cannot guarantee, no matter what our licensing classification is that crap won't happen. Also, one of the problems, I'll reiterate this, and I cannot stress it enough. I am a person who is impacted by envelopes. There are certain criteria, certain private certifications people have been able to take in the past. We are in support of an envelope specialist, which would address the gentleman from Walsh when he was talking about all the leak, moisture, and penetration issues. It will go a certain degree towards doing that. It's going to take time. There's also interactive things that need to take place with our building permit departments. One of the things in this proposed legislation was that the building departments would have to now certify that whoever does certain kinds of work would now have to make sure whether it was commercial or whether it was residential. I'm not so sure the building permit people want to go there. We would like to get them to inspect building envelopes. Until we can get them to inspect building envelopes, some of this legislation just isn't appropriate. Because that's another story. Also, one of the things I object to strenuously is one of the problems that our industry, whether it's the home builders or the Oregon remodelers, has addressed for over 20 years is we need to encourage people to enter the construction industry. We have people right now that can't find good workers. You start limiting who can become a residential contractor. We're going to continue to shave away the people that want to enter into this business and can enter into this business. Listing the fact that somebody has to have 4 years' experience and be a key employee is a backdoor strategy to limit entry into this industry. I sat in a meeting here 10 years ago and listened to Tom Kelly tell us that most independent contractors didn't have a right to be in business because they're mostly glorified employees. That's big businesses' attitudes about losing highly trained employees into the marketplace. So this is another strategy to keep highly trained people from actually becoming independent and self-employed and fulfill the American dream. And I think that the legislature should not be a tool for this kind of backdoor limiting entry. Limiting telling someone how much they can have on putting on the CCB website how much experience somebody has by putting this into the back door is another way of doing that. Why not just say every contractor doesn't have 4 years' experience must put on their contract, I don't have enough experience to do this job, go find somebody else to do it. And that's what this legislation is all about. Oh, let's put a type one says I have this experience, type two I only have this experience. That says that anyone who has more than 8 years will never make a mistake, that they're totally qualified, and I don't believe that's true. I highly suggest that you don't pass this. This is prejudicial towards small business, and in Oregon, that is what makes Oregon economy work. And so far, the AGC has not given us any real reason to pass it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions from the committee? Representative Girard.
Thank you, Chair. This is basically, you feel that this is basically a turf battle bill with AGC?
I do.
Is that kind of what the consensus is?
Representative Girard, Phil Peach, the record. If it is a turf battle, it's one that none of us knew existed until this bill was introduced. The system seems to have worked fine in the past, so this sort of seems to us, as I think one of the representatives said, almost a solution looking for a problem, at least from our standpoint.
Just a quick follow-up.
Follow-up, please.
There are parts of this bill that I actually quite like, and the continuing ed part is one that I quite admire in this bill. Is there any way that we can clean this bill up so that you can be satisfied?
Representative Girard, there is a continuing education legislation that's before this legislature now that comes out of the Construction Claims Task Force. And I'm pretty sure we actually had that presented to us by our lobbyist, Steve Cafuri, and voted to support that legislation. So, you know, I agree with you. Continuing education is coming. It's probably long overdue. And it's something that the Oregon Remodelers Association supports. So we would be happy to, you know, work with you or with anyone, you know, bringing that legislation forward to make sure that piece of the legislation works. And like you, there are a couple of things in this bill that I like, and I actually list them in the written testimony that you'll see. I just don't see any way to salvage this bill, but I would definitely support a positive reaction to the things that are being handled in other legislation.
Other questions? Mr. Peach, I had one when you mentioned about the bond going up, and you know, notwithstanding what you've discussed about the, you know, the difference between the specialty one and the specialty two, I suppose, where, you know, one's got 4 years of experience, and I think that you make a good point there. But the price different. What do remodelers pay in bond right now?
I'd rather defer to those who pay them, if it's all right, Mr. Chairman.
Because these bonds, and I'm only speaking as a private business owner, Representative Holly Chair Holding, it's the price of the bond itself right now is a very reasonable cost, usually under $1,000. And because the insurance companies do not at this point in time, it's my understanding, have to do big financial checks on people, but primarily because... And Craig Smith with the CCB can probably attest to this. They collect about $6 million a year in bond money, but out goes is about $1.25 million. So there isn't a crisis in the insurance industry to justify raising bonds, because the amount of money that isn't covered, which is about $1 million, doesn't get collected, if I'm correct about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, my question was, do remodelers purchase a $15,000 bond right now, or a $20,000?
And it's going to 20.
And it's going to 20.
If it goes up to the recommended
going
amount.
Going to 20, and under this bill, you would have to have a $25,000 bond. I guess as a level two specialty contractor?
Right.
Correct.
But...
Representative Holden, I think your question had to do with the cost. Is there a big cost difference between, you know, when you're at that level of difference of $5,000 in the bond, doesn't represent a large cost difference. So that question really, you know, the insurance companies don't, I think it was mentioned on Wednesday that when you get above $75,000, that's when they really start paying attention to your financial strength and your what your financials look like and that sort of thing. At the smaller bond level, I think the size of the bond does not necessarily affect it, which is one of the reasons we supported it. I think the issue here is that, you know, if you're a small remodeler, can you cross over the margin and do work in an apartment complex without changing your bond all that much? If you're a large commercial contractor, you can become a small remodeler pretty easily. But if you're a small remodeler, you can't cross the margin very easily. And we see this as a way to kind of limit that ability to cross the margin and work on both sides of the commercial and residential market in an area that we traditionally have been able to do without complication. It's that area of definition. You know, we're not disagreeing that companies that can build, you know, renovate the Capitol and build the historical building over here or the archives building, you know, shouldn't be commercial contractors. Of course they should. We're talking about the thousands of small businessmen who are on the margins but that can move back and forth across this and that their bond currently allows them to do. I don't think the increasing of the bond is going to restrict that. It's more the definitions.
Okay, thank you. One more item.
One of the things that's happened in our industry, and a couple years ago I testified at the task, there was a meeting with the insurance industry. We are all having the industry is being shaped right now. One of the reasons I do not do siding anymore, but I replace windows and doors, is because the insurance company that I could get to do insurance with me said, if I want to pay $40,000 a year for insurance, you can do siding. I said, let me think a minute. I think I'll spend $5,000 a year and I won't do siding. The insurance industries are shaping what's going on with or without a definition of what is commercial or residential. So if you do large work and you do certain kinds of work, these insurance companies, because of the outgoes and the liability, you know, lawsuits, they are already telling us who and who cannot do certain kinds of work just by what they are charging for the actual liability insurances. Many roofers and window contractors are paying $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year already. They are already under scrutiny of their insurance companies. If you have a claim that doesn't pay out, you pretty much can hang up your shingle. There's a good possibility. And they say, well, their insurance is available, but not if it's not affordable, and that's the joke. And that's what this commercial contracting is going. Well, if you can't play with the big boys, you just shouldn't be playing. Well, we're already struggling with these things. That's what caused the governor's task force to get created in the first place, because we want to do something about these lawsuits. And this could only harm our industry, not help it, at a critical time when it is so important that people who can do the work, who are qualified to do work, and people like me who are in my 50s, you know, I'm a few years from retirement here, I'm sitting, what do I want to do and stay in this industry? And a lot of us are getting out as fast as we can. And that's going to leave an even bigger dearth of qualified people who do have experience. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you very much for testifying to us today. Appreciate it. Next up, Jessica Adamson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jessica Adamson here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors, and I have with me Mr. Jeremy Vermilio from Jordan Trader Firm here to, who's worked with us on the drafting component to answer any technical questions you might have. Let me first start by saying that certainly from AGC's perspective, this is not about a turf war with the remodeling industry that does a fantastic job in this state of providing excellent service to their clients. This is not about us trying to take over that work in any way. That's not what this is about at all. This is about improving the standard of practice in the commercial side of the industry. And there is a wide breadth of work. As you recall from our testimony at your last hearing, the definitions that we used when we looked at residential structure, small commercial structure, and large commercial structure were not definitions that we created, but rather ones that were in statute that we did not change. As was our explanation from the beginning, that the definitions we were working off of were the ones in statute. We understand that there may be problems with those, and we remain committed to working on those. A member of this committee raised a concern with us on Wednesday with respect to townhouse units, which there is not a condo association. We've gone back and talked about that. We are willing to include those as a residential component. So that, again, we remain open to that. From a condominium standpoint, if you look at the definition of a residential structure, it includes a single unit as a residential structure. So if you are in a condo unit, you're doing work in an individual unit, carpet, paint, those kinds of things, those remain a residential activity. I think there is perhaps a rub, and we hope that we can continue to work through that as it relates to apartment complexes. There's an interesting situation as when those are first built, those are clearly a commercial endeavor. They are very large structures. There are very many buildings and many units involved in the majority, certainly of the new ones that are being built today. As to whether the carpet and paint of an individual unit, should that be remodeling work and not necessarily subject to the commercial license? I think if it's carpet and paint that we're talking about, that's one thing. If we're talking about siding and windows, that perhaps is another. But I think what I want to share with you today is that you have AGC's commitment to continue to sit at the table and try and work those things out as best we can. I do want to say, as was mentioned, we did go to the remodelers associations. We went to many to try and share our perspective, share our idea, and get feedback. At that time, we did ask specifically on the question of workers' compensation insurance. Should it apply to everyone in the industry, to all contractors, residential or commercial? Or should it be restricted to the independent contractors that work on the commercial side? And during that conversation, we heard very clearly we are uncomfortable with it applying to the residential side, and we said we understand, and we are okay with that. We will apply it to the commercial side. And I can tell you that our contractors rely heavily on independent contractors, and talk about the highway industry in particular. Folks that work out there that are independent contractors, that's a critical component to their business plan, to have folks out there able to do that work. But we also believe this is a question of safety. It's a question of responsibility. And I think we want to be clear, we are not here to say that independent contractors shouldn't exist, aren't a benefit to the industry, or any of the other concerns that were raised by the previous witnesses. In fact, we believe very strongly that they contribute positively to the industry. But from our perspective, if you're going to do work on the commercial side as an independent contractor, again, understanding there's some work perhaps to be done on those definitions that we remain committed to do. But if you're going to do that, that personal election workers' compensation insurance should be a part of your portfolio of insurances that you carry. This bill does not require the building department to certify whether or not the work is being done by a commercial or residential contractor. There is perhaps some additional work that can be done here, but I do want to say that in front of you today, and again with the many thanks to the Construction Contractors Board, who has put in many hours to help us recraft this bill in a way that creates a single license with an endorsement, so you're not carrying two separate licenses or two separate insurance policies, but a single license. The redraft of what 701 ORS 701 would look like is in front of you, and we hope to continue to work on that. We hope to start getting amendments drafted to reflect many of the changes that are here today that we believe go a long way in terms of reducing the impact to most small businesses on how they choose to acquire their license. I have one last thing to share as it relates to the bond amount for a level 2 commercial contractor. Per our commitment to the Hispanic Chamber and NAMCO, we agreed that we would make the bond limits for a level 2 commercial contractor mirror those of whatever it is this committee chooses to change the bond limits to for the residential side. If nothing changes, then we would lower the $25,000 to $20,000. So it would hopefully mirror those requirements as opposed to be something different. We remain very committed to the notion that this industry should remain open. We spent a lot of time working on that. That's why we reached out early on to the remodelers. We could not agree that all reconstruction, renovation, remodeling of any type, which would include projects from the painting and carpeting and windows that you heard about to, quite frankly, the major construction in the brewery box in Portland, we could not agree that none of that should be commercial construction. And at the time, that was the request that we had. We agreed to disagree on that point. However, we do remain committed to staying at the table to see if we can't make this better to deal with the carpet and paint and minor renovation issues that the remodelers raise. We are not out to kill the small business industry in Oregon. All of my members either are or started out as small contractors, care very much about their colleagues and care very much about the future of this industry, which relies upon folks getting into the industry. So thank you for allowing me to talk at length there, but thank you as well for allowing me to clarify where AGC is truly coming from with this legislation.
Questions from the committee? Did you want to testify as well, or
I'm primarily here as a resource. I guess I'll make a couple of comments. Again, for the record, my name is Jeremy Vermilia. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Jordan Schrader. My practice is primarily in the area of construction law. I represent remodeling contractors and residential contractors and developers, as well as a number of commercial contractors. And I sit on the board of directors of the Associated General Contractors, but I'm also a member of the Oregon Remodelers Association. So I sit on the head of a pin here, and I have interests on both sides of this issue, but my interest is primarily in doing what's right for the industry. And I wasn't here, unfortunately, for the testimony previously, but I have talked to the folks from the ORA, and I understand what their concerns are. And I think the real challenge here is to try to minimize the amount of gray between the two sides of the industry, the residential side and the commercial side, and where that gray comes up. Unfortunately, the ORA and its members are often in that middle. But I will say that I have worked hard, and I know the members of the AGC have worked hard, and the CCB has worked hard to try to find the gray, number one, and try to minimize the gray, so that when you draw this line between the two sides of the industry, you make it as easy as possible for those who operate on both sides of that line to do that without impacting their businesses. And I think that in looking at the way the bill is currently structured and the way the existing law is currently laid out, the way to solve that may well be to take another look at those, at the definitions section, the definitions of large commercial, small commercial, and residential structures, and try to address the concerns that were raised by the members who are doing work in that middle area. Once you get away from that middle area, the gray area, I think the bill makes a lot of sense on both sides of the issue. It's just you've got to try to find a way to thread the needle that makes sense for all parts of the industry, the residential home builders, the commercial builders, and the remodelers. And I think that is not an insurmountable task. And I think that in the end, I think that the suggestions by the CCB get a lot closer to that. We may need to take a look at those definitions, and I think we'll be able to come up with a solution that everybody can live with. And I'm committed to doing that, and I know that the members of the AGC are committed to doing that.
Thank you. And I haven't really had a lot of time to look at the CCB, I guess, recommendations or proposed amendments, I suppose, to that. But it appears to me that they've done away with the definition of specialty 1, specialty 2, or level 1, level 2. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, actually, that has not occurred. What's happened here is we've clarified that instead of creating two separate licenses, which was what 3242 as written does, was our initial approach to the problem was to say, okay, you get either a residential license with the residential number, with your residential everything, and then if you want a commercial license, you go get a wholly separate license with a separate number and a separate this and that. And so if you had folks that did both, there would be somewhat of a nightmare at the Construction Contractors Board of trying to track, okay, is this insurance policy for this license or that license or which bond is. And in talking with them about what it is that we're trying to do, they raised an option for us that we thought was very valuable, which is to say instead of starting out with are you residential, are you commercial, or do you need to have both licenses, why don't we just say everyone has a CCB license? And when you go to fill out your application form, you decide what level of endorsement do you want. Do you want a commercial endorsement? And if so, at what level? Do you want a residential endorsement as either general residential or specialty residential? Or do you want both, in which case, check your boxes? Or are you a licensed developer, which is a whole other kind of cat that we aren't touching at all? So let's reframe this so that everyone only has one license number, but we essentially give out endorsements. It accomplishes the same goal. It has the same structure. It has the same requirements with the general level 1, general level 2, specialty level 1, specialty level 2. That's all still in here. The reason why we're presenting this so late is because there were changes made up until about 2 hours ago, and so this is just a function of actually physically getting it done, and we appreciate their work with us on that. But the idea is how do we restructure it in a way that A, makes sense within their statute, and B, eases the administrative burden on the CCB, and we felt after consultation with them that this was the best way to go.
And Mr. Chairman, just for your information, where the endorsement concept comes into play is on page 5 of the draft that you have before you.
Just curious, does it make sense or not make sense? I don't really know for sure. Rather than having different levels of contractors, the contractors would have a tiered bond amount that they would pay based on the, I guess, dollar volume of construction work they do annually? And instead of having a tiered system, or is that really not relevant?
Mr. Chair, I think the concern we would have about the construction volume component is that you have businesses that on a year-to-year basis, anytime that you create a clear a tiered system, you end up with a cliff somewhere. And when folks work right up against a line, what we don't want to do is keep somebody from saying, well, I have the opportunity at the end of this year to take on another $500,000 in work, and that amount, or for that matter, $100,000 in work, that amount would tip me over, and I would find myself in a problem with relation to the CCB. And so I think trying to keep those lines clear would be difficult. We felt that this was a way to kind of try and provide incentive for folks that were doing primarily commercial, that wanted to grow in the commercial market, to continue to do that, again, while leaving the door wide open to folks to enter the industry or who only dabbled in the commercial side of the industry from time to time to be able to get in at a level that was appropriate without being particularly burdensome.
Mr. Chairman, in addition to that, I think what you have, if you go to that kind of a concept is, I think, as a practical matter, you run into some regulatory issues in terms of trying to track volumes. Who's going to be responsible for that? Are you going to put that burden on CCB? You add a layer of regulation and burden to the CCB in terms of trying to figure out where the volume levels are. Those volume levels fluctuate from year to year. If somebody is operating, on a project where their bond level isn't, where they don't qualify, you know, how do you enforce that? The way this is laid out now, I think you have a little bit more of an objective approach to determining which level you're at, and I think you also limit you reduce the amount of administrative burden on the contractor's board in terms of trying to enforce it and keep track of it as well.
And Mr. Chair, I should have said during my opening comment, I think Mr. Vomelia here will remember, we actually discussed that as an approach and went through just the kind of analysis we just talked here. But early on, that was one of the things that we talked about, is do we look at it from a volume perspective? And after trying to run through the scenarios, found these hurdles.
Any other questions, Representative Gerard?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'm kind of going to follow up on the same line of questioning, and I come from a different perspective. I'm a dentist. I'm licensed in pretty specific sort of work, and when we get a dental license, 5 years later, we don't get an expert license because, I mean, that just doesn't happen in my profession. And I see kind of as a grade one and grade two with the time limits involved in the bill. A lousy contractor to me that spends 5 years, but I don't understand why he should be a class one and somebody else would be a class two that spends less time but does nice work. So I like a lot of the bill, but I have problems with that particular segment and that particular breakdown.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drun, I think that there's there remains the experience portion isn't with one individual. It is among the key employees in that firm. And again, the goal here is to make sure that folks that are entering into the commercial side have had experience in the industry at some level. So whether that is as an employee at some point in their career, or as a business owner, or have several people that have had that experience. So collaboratively, when you start out as a firm on the commercial side, you are starting from a place where you have had experience of some variety. Many of the firms who are in the commercial industry do indeed have that. And I think that what we're looking at is a firm that has that's doing lousy work or doesn't have their financials together, just because they've been in business longer, they will not necessarily be able to move to the level one level. Because if you don't have your financial house in order, it's going to become very difficult for you to obtain a higher bonding amount. The idea is that we set a level at which we say, here's where we would like the majority of the industry to be. And the struggle, as we talked about on Wednesday, really for the industry was, how do we create an environment where we encourage growth, but we don't stop opportunity, where we try and raise the standard of practice in the industry, which is kind of where the level one level is, but that we are not exclusionary, and that's where the two-level system came from. I think knowing that the experience is more than just with one person, more than just with the RMI, but among really your management team or lead employees of that company allows the kind of broad base of it that most companies will be able to get there relatively early in their existence.
Thank you. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Jessica. I have a question about Section 7 in this amendment that was handed out, and I can't tell where it came from because it says that there's red changes, blue changes, and green changes, and because we got this in black and white, I think you're testing us to see if we can figure it out. But Section 7 seems to deal with residential limited contractor limitations where it does have a dollar amount. And you talked about a dollar amount as a disincentive to do, for example, another project because it'll bump the contractor into another category. And so if that's a concern with larger amounts, isn't it a concern with this, what seems to be a sort of small amount? I'm just trying to figure out what that is intended to address, that Section 7, which looks like it's new, but I can't tell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, I think there are a whole bunch of definitions that were moved over from one section to another, and I will be happy to get you a color copy of this so that it makes more sense. But I can tell you that today, residential limited contractors are subject to a dollar threshold. Today. So we are not making any changes with respect to the limitations on folks that are limited contractors, but that does indeed exist today.
And follow up, please. And the residential limited contractor limitations I haven't had a chance to figure out, what is this section for? Are they completely exempt? Are they in a completely different category, or
Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, I'm looking back with some hope that Mr. Smith can talk. I am not familiar with the limited concept and why it came into being, so perhaps he can shed some light.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, Representative Bonamici, currently there is a category of CCB licensee that is a limited contractor, and you are Craig Smith, Construction Contractors Board. Thank you, sir. And so this is an area of the law that's trying to carve out and keep that small contractor area. I should tell you that it's not been a great category for us. There are a lot of people that are in this category, and they're obligated not to have a contract over $5,000 or sell more than $40,000 per year in total gross volume. And we have a substantial number of contractors in this category that have reported to us in certain censuses that we take that they have a dollar volume of sales that's over $250,000 and $500,000, which would disqualify them from this category. The point I'm trying to make is that there is a substantial amount of either confusion on their part or there perhaps is some cheating, and it is a enforcement nightmare when you have this stair-stepped approach based upon the total volume that a contractor produces for us. So the answer to the question is that this is existing law.
One more follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
But how does it apply to this new proposal? Will these residential limited contractors also have the continuing education requirement and have to comply with the other provisions in the bill?
Yeah. Chair Holby and Representative Bonamici, they would not have to comply with any of the commercial requirements. With your permission, I'll excuse myself.
Oh, don't be so quick.
No, you may.
Okay.
Unless anybody has any more questions for Mr. Smith.
No, if I could just make a brief comment, though, if that type of provision is problematic, then it seems like that's what we should be addressing.
Yeah, it's not in this bill.
Right, I understand.
Any other questions for the AGC representatives? Seeing none at this time, thank you for your testimony today. Next up, Scott Berry.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. Scott Berry with the Oregon Home Builders Association. I'll just make some brief comments and hopefully we can all go out and enjoy the sunny Friday afternoon after that. But we do have some concerns about this legislation. I signed up as neutral because we haven't seen the amendments, and I understand there are significant changes. I don't want to sort of comment as to where we are without having seen those. So some of the concerns we do have with the bill are the potential crossovers, and a lot of that was talked about today, so it's kind of difficult to get up and make comments one way or the other because I haven't seen the amendments. But I will say that the crossover issues with commercial projects that are completed, for instance, and then a contractor goes into work on that project, does that person have to be licensed as a commercial-only contractor? Is a concern. The higher bond is also, I'm not sure it's a concern for us. I'm a little perplexed by it. That's not a bond that's available to the consumer necessarily. It doesn't work like the CCB process where the contractor's board would allow the consumer to access that bond. That bond is accessible after, generally after a lawsuit. And then the bond is there. So if you have a $2 million insurance policy with a $75,000 bond, you might have $2,075,000 worth. So it adds, I guess, to the overall package, but it's not the same as the bond that a residential contractor would have to have that's accessed by the contractor's board. They're two different, totally separate items. And so to the extent you're raising the bond, I'm not sure you're not just making it more difficult to get into that category without a whole lot of extra protection to the consumer or to the end building owner. But that's, again, something I haven't seen the amendments. I'm not sure how that's going to be addressed. Continuing ed pieces. We obviously have the other bill through the task force that works on continuing education. So the potential differences between that continuing ed and the continuing ed in this proposal are, I think, significant. So addressing those would be an important thing to take a look at. There's different definitions of residential. There's one at the contractors board, and then there's another within the residential structures board over at building codes division. And what projects qualify as residential or commercial are different at both of those places. Not necessarily a positive thing, but they are different. And so looking at the two different definitions and seeing what might work for this, if separation is the way that we go, would be an important thing for us to look at. Again, until we see the amendments, our association doesn't have a position, but we do have some concerns.
Questions of Mr. Berry? Thank you for your testimony. Anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 3242?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Don Miner, here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association. Amongst our members, we have a couple of factories located here in Oregon who build other than residential structures. And when they build them in components, and when the components are combined, they probably meet the definition here of a commercial structure. And my first thought was, well, even that isn't going to be much of a problem because they can easily qualify. But after listening to the remodeler's testimony, I became a little concerned about those subcontractors that would work on these structures, including the folks who transport them, the individual truck drivers who are licensed in Oregon as contractors. So my concern would be that they might be affected, or the person, the small, the electrician who makes the connections out on the delivery side. So I would, something we'd like to work with the proponents of the bill on to make sure that that works to their satisfaction. Thank you.
Questions of Mr. Miner? Thank you for your testimony. Anyone else wanting to testify? Thank you for that. You know, it's a interesting subject matter, as always, construction industry with the bond levels and shoddy work and all that. I was wondering, Representative Girard, did Dennis have to carry bonds for shoddy work?
Malpractice insurance, and yes, we do.
And do they have level one and two dentists?
I'd like to think we're all number ones.
Smart man.
You can ask about lawyers.
Well, I don't see them in this bill, but with that, I'd like to close the public hearing on House Bill 3242.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we suspend the rules and allow Representative Galizio to vote on SR 91.
SB 91?
SB 91, sir.
Representative Girard moves we suspend the rules to allow Representative Galizio to vote on Senate Bill 91. Any discussion?
Does he have a good excuse?
Exactly.
Well, he does. I excused him. So any objections?
No.
Seeing none, Representative Galizio, how do you vote?
I vote aye. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Members.
With that, our committee is adjourned.